It's time for Mac Break Weekly. OS 10.9.3 is here. We'll talk about what it brings to the table. Also, Microsoft's going straight at the Mac Pro with its new Surface Pro 3. We'll talk about the strategy there. And the Beats deal. What is going on with that rumor? All next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 403, recorded May 20th, 2014. That's so Apple. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,500 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit Lynda.com/MacBreak. That's Lynda.com/MacBreak. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to Harry's.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code MacBreak when you check out. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 35 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code MacBreak514. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers Apple, all the Apple topics, Macintosh, Zune. No, that's wrong. I'll figure it out before the end of the show. iPhone. Andy Iannacco is here for the Chicago Sun-Times. And a classic Macintosh logo, the old rainbow logo behind him.
That is an Andy Warhol silkscreen print.
Whoa.
That I found online from ArtNet, and it recently auctioned for like $56,000.
The original or a print?
No, no. It's a series of whatever prints that were made of this issue.
That's nice.
Yeah. And an unsolicited tip, if you want like really good like background art or desktop art or just things to just have around because you like art, go to auction sites because they want to get people to up their bids. So they will put in huge mega resolution scans of all of these pieces. And so I've just got folders and folders of comic book art and like old masters and pre-Raphaelites. It's like, oh, that's nice. I should do something. And of course, I can't do anything with it because I don't have any rights to use those images, but it's pretty to have this like screensaver on your HDTV or.
And I guess it's just incidental in the background of the show. I don't think that we're not going to get in trouble with the Andy Warhol estate.
Well, it's related to Apple News, so we're doing a journalistic thing by commenting on the auction sale price of this. So if you have one of these, if you're at one of those Macworld Expos where they had like just those stacks and stacks of Andy Warhol's original silkscreen prints, you probably don't want take it down off of your kid's bedroom wall because you can probably get tens of thousands of dollars for it.
Did they really do that?
No, they didn't. It was an art print. He did a series of prints about where he did put his own spin on corporate logos as probably some sort of commentary on how easy it is to be Andy Warhol and sell a print series for a lot of money.
He didn't even the irony of it is that many of these prints he didn't even make himself. He had the factory with a bunch of people doing them.
It's almost admirable how he had this level of cynicism about like art as commodity, and that miraculously became part of the package that he was selling you.
Isn't that amazing? Brilliant. Hey, let's also welcome Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Renee is here from Montreal, where he is enjoying the perfect summer weather.
It is. It's a strange place, Leo. We went from minus 20 to plus 20 in about a couple weeks. It's just, this is why we can't have nice weather.
Well, it finally happened. I'm so relieved. 10.9.3 is out. You can get it today. Download it onto your Macintosh. And the reason I'm excited about it is it finally gives us true support for 4K displays. If you have a MacBook Pro with a 15-inch Retina display late 2013 or the late 2013 Mac Pro. Mm-hmm. And you and I can now talk about it because we were NDA'd. I was really neat that Apple did the open beta.
Yeah, and they've already announced 10.9.4 open beta. So if you're worried that all the rest of the unwashed masses now had your exclusive 10.9.3, you can just grab 10.9.4 when it comes out. And
I wouldn't run out. But so the one that we're getting today, is that the same as the bits that were pushed in the beta program a couple of days ago? Or is there something new and wonderful in this too?
I didn't have a chance to look at it, but typically if they're pushing it again, there might be a couple new bits in there.
So improves 4K display support on the Mac Pro. It adds the ability to sync contacts and calendars between a Mac and iOS device using USB. No longer do you have to go through iTunes, I guess. That's nice. Improves the reliability of VPN connections using IPsec in Safari 7.0.3. I have been using 10.9.3 for a couple of weeks on your recommendation, so it would support my 4K display. And I have to say, in the last iteration, they added essentially the same kind of high DPI, pixel doubling that you can do on the Retina displays. So
the scaling modes.
The scaling modes make a huge difference because, of course, on the 4K display, which is running, 3820 by 2160, I think. Or, 2160. That native resolution, the menu is this small, the icon. And you can make stuff bigger, but it really... So, but what I did, and it seems to have done pretty well, there was a little tearing on some of the scaling things. That's the 4K display in the middle. That's the Asus PQ, 321? There's only two 4K displays that have 60 hertz refresh rate. This is one of them. The other is the Sharp that Apple sells in the Apple Store. And I'm told that the same IGZO panels, just wrapped in different companies.
They're gorgeous, Leo.
It really looks good. And what I've done is set it to 1920 by 1080, half resolution. But, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's my understanding that high DPI means that when I have something of higher resolution, a movie, a photo, it will show those one-to-one in the pixels. But the UI, just like on the Retina, right? The UI is, and now it's really, and the text is, man, the text looks good. It's like a giant Retina. It's like a 31.5-inch Retina display.
It's amazing because they played around with resolution independence, which sounds like the ultimate idea, but it turns out that that's a lot of overhead and scaling PDFs or SVGs is not that efficient. So now they do this thing where exactly that. Interface elements, they just pixel double them. So they stay the same size, but they're twice the density. But that means you also actually still have the pixels that make up all those points, and they can show your Final Cut video or your Aperture or Lightroom photo or your Photoshop document, whatever those things are at actual size. So you really get the best of both worlds without all the overhead. It may not be the perfect solution for millennia to come, but it's a really smart solution that works right now.
I love it. So I've got the left and the right are 27-inch cinema displays. In the middle is the 31.5-inch Asus. And I just love it. I just love it. You can see I have the chat room running at all times, Twitter running at all times, Bitcoin on the right, my calendar, a terminal. I've always wanted to have a terminal app open. I can't do anything with it, but I just always wanted to have, that's what the geeks have, is a terminal app. Always.
You could run NORAD off that display set up, Leo.
And don't judge me, but you'll see in the middle, I'm actually watching video of Microsoft's Surface announcement this morning. It is a very satisfying arrangement. And I don't mean because it's so expensive and impressive, but it's very, the utility is very high. And I and the big screen. I missed my 30-inch Apple display, which Jason Howell has right now. This is the nicest display I've ever used. There's still a little. The way they do these, Renee, correct me if I say this wrong, but the way they do this is as if it's two displays. It's coming through the Thunderbolt display port, and they in effect send two displays. So occasionally they'll get. If I scroll real fast, it'll get a little bit out of sync. So there's some tearing in the middle. But I notice at 1920 by 1080, exactly half, that's minimized. There's very little of it. Other scaled resolutions, not so much. I see a little bit of that.
Yeah, I'm not positive on the details, but you're pushing the boundaries of Thunderbolt 2, which is why they're working on Thunderbolt 3.
Right.
So it's probably like an old dual-link DVI when they send half the signal through each channel.
It's exactly like that, right?
Yeah, because I think Thunderbolt 2 isn't twice the size. It's doubled. So you have double half of each.
Right. It really works well, and the text is so readable. In fact, it's kind of big at 1080.
So the old monitors scrape your eyeballs now, Leo, right? Like you can just see the pixels on them.
You really can. So welcome to the world of Retina at a great cost. This is a $2,500 monitor. It's not cheap. But do you think that the fact that Apple's pushing out 10.9.3 with support for 4K monitors is some indication that Apple might at WWDC announce a 4K display of its own?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard for a long time that they're making one, but for them, it's always a question of math. How many panels, what quality panels, what technology? Because they're not going to make one. They're going to try and make, you know, tens of thousands, if not millions of them. And typically they go for IMAX first. The IMAX get the panel first. And then when they're in supply balance, they do the cinema displays. But because there's a Mac Pro now out already, and because they have all these computers that can support 4K, maybe they'll give the panels to the Apple 4K display first. There's a lot of questions involving supply chain stuff.
Yeah. The other question is whether they can make a big enough markup on them, even if they're just selling them to Mac Pro owners at this point. So I would guess that they're going to hold off on that until they know how many they can actually push through.
But let Sharp and Asus get all the money?
Define all the money. I mean, it's no,
it might be $12. I understand what you're saying. The market,
exactly. Yeah. They're perfectly okay with letting Sharp and Asus and Samsung and all these other people make 12% right. margins. They're very happy to sell fewer but make 5 or 6 or 7 times as much money off of each panel.
So, the two monitors I mentioned are capable of 60 hertz at that full resolution. There are many much less expensive 4K displays out. But they're 30 hertz. Is that right, Renee?
I believe that you can drive them at 60 hertz now with
because I know that 3.
Yeah, the Dell one is running at 60 hertz with 10.93. Right. I don't know if it's as good as the panels that Apple is selling, but they're much cheaper. So you always you have to make that calculation on your own.
It looks good. Just from a purely subjective point of view, it looks good. And I'm using the Mac Pro. A base model, but still, that's got dual graphics cards in it. That doesn't seem to slow it down or make it hot or anything.
It does make you wonder how this is going to affect whatever new interface is coming along for macOS. Because remember that iOS 7 really was a response to the fact that most iOS devices now have these Retina display screens, and you don't really appreciate how kind of crummy the old interface was until you really compare them side by side. And so I wonder what happens when Apple starts planning for a world in the near future when more people will have 4K displays or anything with a Retina interface on it. Whereas right now the MacBook Air is the first buy-in type of Mac portable. The iMac is still the first buy-in type of Mac desktop. But I wonder if they're going to be planning that far ahead to say we have to make a user interface that will look great once we have no need for drop shadows, no need much for as intense anti-aliasing or any bit twiddling that we used to have to do for iOS 10.9.
Here is Ryan Shrout reported this on This Week in Computer Hardware the other day, and the PC Perspective has a story. Samsung has announced a 4K 28-inch for just $700, and it is 3840, 2160, 60 hertz. So I think we're going to start seeing, I don't know how good the quality is and all of that, but boy.
I was going to say, I mean, I think people who are buying 4K displays at this point are video editors, they're photo editors, they're graphic designers. They have a real need to be able to see, as Renee said, the full billboard at full resolution pretty much.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be satisfied with a non-calibrated display that is a little bit too green.
It's a specialty market, obviously. And those people are willing to pay what seems like a lot to us, but really isn't a lot for a professional for that quality.
Well, yeah, their time is more valuable than their money. They just want a display that's color accurate and high depth and everything.
Kay Ford in our chat room is reporting that the 10.93, he says, broke a lot of OpenCL apps like Premiere Pro and Resolve. He said no problem with Final Cut. In fact, I used Final Cut Pro last night, and it seemed to be working fine. I imagine updates will come out for Premiere and Resolve, but... I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But that's something to pay attention to. These things happen, and maybe that's why
the production machine. Yeah, if it's a production machine, don't upgrade.
Yeah, as always. On the other hand, I'm really happy that I did the early upgrade, and I'll do the final upgrade today and see what happens. But
you risked your home theater for us, Leo.
That's not my home theater. That's just I use that for email and surfing the web.
It's going to earn the spot in the home theater.
But doing it with style.
People in the chat room, probably those of you who are up late at night or early in the morning, normally I'm only here when I'm in the studio. Now, because I have it running at all times on my display, you'll note that I am off frequently in the chat room. And one of the great joys I have is, it's about 3 in the morning and somebody says something snotty in the chat room and I respond. I just love that. They back up very rapidly.
Shock and awe, Laporte
style. Always in there now. So let's briefly, since I was watching the Microsoft Surface 3 announcement, and I know this is an Apple show and it's the last thing we do, but it looks like really what Microsoft has decided to do is not assault the iPad directly, but go after the MacBook, both Air and Pro, with this new Surface 3. It is absolutely MacBook pricing. If you want an i5, you're talking $1,299. If you want an i7, you're talking almost $2,000. Have you guys looked at the specs on the Surface Pro 3 and compared it to the Mac books? And does it? It seems like that's the that's where they're aiming.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a look, and I was watching the live stream. I wasn't in New York today, but it definitely looks like they are not scrimping one bit. They really want to sell the point that we are selling this to you as a laptop consumer. We're going to sell you a machine that has the exact same specs, the exact same build quality as a nice Ultrabook or as a nice MacBook Air, but with the following list of added features. Among them being a really, really good stylus now that makes it far more suitable for creatives to use. One of the reasons why Surface was such a big win for so many artists was that you basically have a Wacom tablet built into it, so you could actually use this as your field drawing computer. They're also using demos of having in Final Draft, producers and studio executives writing comments directly onto script pages. I don't know if that's going to be a really super popular feature.
I love the demo of that, though. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's totally pen intuitive. It'll wake up when you touch the pen to it. If you want to take a note during a meeting and do something with it within the office infrastructure, it's really, really easy to do that. And it's also the other big point they were making is that they actually had a balance scale to show you it is actually lighter than a MacBook Air. So what they're trying to do is they're certainly not trying to go after anybody who would be thinking about buying an iPad mini or even a baseline $500 iPad Air. They're really going after people who might have either considered going for a MacBook Air because it really is the only really good premium Ultrabook out there, and also going after people who might have been considering getting an iPad in addition to whatever the laptop they were going to be getting, because they did a very good job of underscoring the main point, which is they think it makes no sense to have a really expensive tablet and a really expensive notebook when you can have a really expensive notebook that also removes the need for a $500 tablet.
Yeah, there were rumors there would be a Surface Mini
8-inch,
and that did not happen. And so I really have to say, you know, this is Intel, this isn't ARM. Mm-hmm. This is full-blown Windows. It's 12 inches, 3.2 form factor, 9 hours battery life, and priced pretty much right across the board, at least if Mary Jo Foley is right, and she seems to have the prices on this, the same way Apple's pricing its MacBooks.
A really interesting thing for me in this is that there's this old joke that it takes Microsoft 3 years to get it right. And I think when a lot of us saw the Surface, we all said, this is not a tablet. This is maybe what the next generation of laptops will look like. But Microsoft was insisting on the no compromises motto on advertising it against tablets. And it didn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, Steve Jobs, when he sold the iPad, came out and said, it's got to be better than a phone and better at a laptop at certain key things. And this event was the one where I finally think Microsoft understood what they wanted to say. This is better than a tablet, better than a laptop at these few things. And one of the most hilarious things for me is I watch, you know, a lot of television, and they did a ton of product placements for the Surface. And I remember watching Hawaii Five-0 one week, and they took out their iPads and did something quickly. And then the next week, they were in a car and a suspect ran away and they took out their Surface tablet and put the keyboard on the car, locked it into place, started going through it. And the guy was halfway down the street and it was clear they didn't know what it was meant to do. But now you see a Surface, for example, on Arrow and they're using it to watch TV. It seems like they've finally got comfortable with what the Surface is supposed to be. And I think that's the most exciting thing for me in the announcement.
Here's the pricing. The base model, which is an i3 processor, 64 gigs of storage, 4 gigs of RAM, minus a keyboard, $800. Add the keyboard, you're talking $929, which is, you know, and that's $900 for a MacBook Air 11 inch. This is a 12 inch. You go to kind of a more kind of normal configuration. The i5, 128 gigs of storage, 4 gigs of RAM, $1,000 plus the keyboard for $130. You're right. These are almost parallel. to the similar MacBook prices. And I guess the difference is the keyboard's not attached. In fact, it's optional. And you have a pen, which, of course, Steve Jobs very famously said that's stupid.
And it's not Wacom this time. They switched to the Wacom competitor.
Oh, it's not Wacom.
Yeah, exactly.
No, they switched. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a similar type of system, but yeah, it's not they switched away from that, which is what they were using for the Surface previously.
Still pressure sensitive and all of that stuff.
Exactly. It'll do everything that they want that an artist would want to do it. That they even showed off a pressure sensitive version of Adobe Photoshop that will work with it. But it's interesting to see them try to modify their aim a little bit. This to bring Apple back into this. This has always been a really interesting debate about philosophy.
Yeah.
Is it more correct to have a bespoke device for multi-touch and a bespoke device for laptop sort of things? Or can you basically put both of those features into the same device? Does that make sense? And that is really just a Berlin Wall of ideological difference between Apple's thinking and Microsoft's thinking. And as Renee said, there's the common wisdom that every other Star Trek movie is really, really good or really, really bad, however you look at it. And there's the other common wisdom, maybe true, maybe not, is that Apple takes three tries to get something right. And this is the third version of it. And you see them making some critical adjustments to this. Number one being, most obviously, they have ditched the widescreen form factor and now it has an iPad form factor. It has 4x3, exactly what you'd see on a laptop screen. Yeah. And that addresses one big stumbling block that they had with the previous one, because I've used them and when you turn it on its side to go to use it in portrait registration, like if you're reading a book, it almost like says, okay, I'll do that, but I want you to know that I really, really hate having to do this because it just looks like you're reading a legal document. And they also tried to fix the idea that it really isn't so much of a laptop replacement as a desktop replacement, because the one thing it really is hard to do, and of course, the right in this middle of this live press event is the perfect place to show it, you can't sit in a chair and have a Surface in your lap and actually expect to get anything done. You're going to be spending most of your caloric body consumption trying to keep this thing balanced because it's a fold-out kickstand. So now they changed that type pad cover so that it actually attaches magnetically. It still magnetically attaches and really holds on good, but it also clicks on a little bit higher than it used to. And the kickstand has also been redesigned a little bit so that it's easier to have that thing on your lap. So this is the next stage of that ideological battle.
I feel like we're almost in a post-tablet era.
I've been thinking a lot about this over the past 3 or 4 months, because you know what a big advocate of the iPad I am. I love you, and I think more people should try to use it as a notebook replacement, but I don't think that message has really been taken up by the general populace right now. I think that they're really thinking that a notebook is a notebook, a tablet is a totally different thing, and if you can make a tablet that's more like a Kindle, that's even better, which is why everybody seems to be putting so much effort into making these pocketable 8-inch, 7-inch, and even smaller tablets. And it becomes a little bit harder to explain the purpose of a 9.7-inch iPad Air, because you're basically telling people who want to have a separate device for their, quote, real computing, unquote, and you're telling them spend more money for the one that's harder to carry around, even though it doesn't run any apps any differently than the iPad mini does. So I think this is – I've been saying all along that I don't even think that Apple had a real clear picture of who must buy an iPad, which is why in the first introduction to the first iPad, they were not really willing to lock it down as a productivity thing or an entertainment thing. They really wanted to put it out there.
And
people come up. Yeah. They didn't want to tell people what it was so that people could judge it as a notebook or judge it as an expensive ebook reader.
It's a new thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that we're in a phase where this is going to be an interesting test case to see if people are buying the idea of the multi-touch tablet as a true next generation real computing device, or if this is going to be really a case where everybody who would have bought a full-sized iPad has bought one right now, and now that there are more options in the market, those people who would have might have been buying one next year are now going to be looking at alternatives. So
my gut tells me there's two distinct devices. There's a computer, desktop or laptop, and there's a phone. And this idea that there might be something in between, and that's how Apple presented the iPad from day one, I think is going to disappear. I really think that it's either you want a laptop or you want a phone.
It could be a range of things. So that old Steve Jobs truck and car analogy, right. You might get wearable. It depends how much computer do you need. And for a lot of people, a traditional computer is still not accessible, still intimidating. It's still not what they want. So maybe a phone or a tablet is better. But then you get into wearables, which are like motorcycles. They're sub-phone. You go from phones to tablets, and you have phablets in between, which are, you know, maybe like an SUV or a hybrid or something. Then you get the tablet. And then maybe you have something between the tablet and the truck or the computer, which is like the Surface. And you have this range of things, just like we have a range of cars. And I think that's only a symbol of the market maturing, because mobile is so new and we're so unused to it. And now you have primary and only computing platforms that aren't traditional computers. And that's what I think makes all this so exciting right now.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, lots more to talk about. Andy Anakos here from the Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. We're talking Macintosh. Yes, we're talking iPhone and iPad. We're talking Apple. Our show today brought to you by Lynda.com. Whatever it is you want to learn today, Lynda's got a class for you. Beautiful video classes. A huge number now. I think it's over 2,500 different classes. Thousands and thousands of videos total. They add new classes every week. Produced high quality. These aren't YouTube, you know, kid videos. These are actually professionals in the industry. People we know, like Mac Break Weekly regular Chris Breen. He does Burt Monroy. Ben Long, some of my favorite people, teach at Lynda.com. What do you want to learn today? You can learn software. You can learn creative things like photography. You can learn business skills, negotiation, resume building. You want to create a podcast? They've got music and video production courses, 3D design and animation. It's really an amazing wealth of stuff. Some of the best teachers in the world. Highly curated. In fact, they have handwritten transcriptions of every class, so you can jump right to the course you want. And their pricing is really great. It's flat rate pricing. So whether you pay the $25 a month for the entire course library or the premium plan, which is only $37.50 a month, that gives you exercise files you can download so you can follow along with instructors. That's great for Photoshop and Lightroom and Final Cut and Premiere and stuff like that. We're going to give you a chance to really get an idea of what Lynda can do if you go to lynda.com/MacBreak. That's LYNDA.com/MacBreak. No cost to you at all. A 7-day trial of the entire place. 4 million people use lynda.com. It is the choice for so many companies, including ours. Lynda, LYNDA.com/MacBreak. Try it free for a week. Visit they have Mavericks. They'll have 1093 soon. That's how fast they work. Whether you have 15 minutes or 15 hours, you can watch at your convenience on your iPad, on your laptop, and pick up where you left off. Keeps track of everything you've done. You can get a first look at Google Docs and Google Sheets. You can take a look at the new iOS apps. You can learn to create and deliver presentations with Keynote 6. The sky's the limit. Try it today. Lynda.com/MacBreak, LYNDA.com/MacBreak. Hey, good news. Siri integration into the podcast app. Siri, play MacBreak Weekly. CarPlay support, improved browsing. I'm actually thrilled to see Apple put more energy into the podcast app.
I don't know if you guys ever saw, there was a blog post 2 years ago by Guy English that was one of my favorite things he's ever written, where he was talking about looking into Siri, about the APIs and whether developers could ever use it. And he writes this sort of dramatic play between people inside Apple. And it's eerily accurate. It's almost the Siri manager comes up and says, are you integrating with Grenada? And he says, I have no idea what that is. And he goes, weren't you disclosed? None of you guys are ever disclosed. And he says, go find out about it. So he wanders over to the Grenada guy and he says, what are you working on? And he says, Siri. Goes, what's that? He goes, I don't know. He goes, can I tell you? I don't think so. Can you tell me what you're doing? And it ends up that Grenada's Find My Friends, and there's no way for them to work together except through usual URL schemes and resource sharing. And it just showed how complicated it was to build this
paranoia
stuff out.
Paranoia strikes deep into your heart. It will creep. And I think this is an unfortunate legacy of Steve Jobs, this incredible drive to secrecy. And that can hurt you as a company. I feel like Tim Cook is backing that a little bit. And I'm curious. I think the fact that they've buried the hatchet with Motorola, this happened this week or last week.
Yeah.
They announced that, you know what, not only are we going to drop our lawsuits against Google and Motorola, we're not going to make a licensing deal, and we're going to work together to kind of improve this patent situation because it sucks. That's not a Steve Jobs move. That's a Tim Cook move. And I'm hoping Tim might do the same thing with secrecy.
Well, to be fair, Steve Jobs could have made that move after talking with a lot of his own people who would then be telling, look, it is now in Apple's best interest to set aside battles that are no longer in this company's best interests. But Apple certainly was going to be having trouble defending all these patent wars at the same time claiming that the patent system is broken and needs to be fixed. Every time you look at the stack of patents that were in dispute with all these suits, you'd see a big pile that Apple absolutely innovated. There was something they invented. There was something that did not exist they created before, and they created something unique that seems to require patent protection. But then there'd also be these things where really something that I know that I've seen well before iOS is now you own the patent. Okay, whatever. So I think
you're right.
A lot
we can never know, and that's why it's stupid to say, well, Steve would have never done that. Yeah. We can't
but
know.
But with Steve, I believe under Steve Jobs, they did write the settlement with Nokia. They did do the settlement with HTC. Right. I'm not sure if they sued Motorola or Motorola sued them, but that was standards involved, and central patents were involved in that. It's really the Samsung one that I think was the driving thing for Steve Jobs because Samsung and Google were both his partners, and he felt personally affronted by that. I don't think Motorola was ever part of that thermonuclear war strategy.
Samsung really is that one company where you look at the first two phones they made after the iPhone and you say, come on, guys. So if Apple ever said, you know what, give us a token $10 settlement and just a handshake. All we wanted was the moral victory. No, that's that is the Popeye versus Bluto fight that happens until the heat death of the universe.
And Motorola couldn't have looked more different. I mean, Motorola, even the early droids looked like Corellian starships, nothing like Apple.
Let's watch with interest, because the rewards are diminishing. Instead of $1 billion, it's $100 million. And Samsung got a little bit out of Apple, you see the price that both companies pay to secrecy because of the disclosure discovery process that goes on in these lawsuits and the public relations loss, I think cannot be minimized. People get pissed off after a while. Well, you're suing, just make a better iPhone. Now the real test will be the rock star patents. Microsoft, Apple, BlackBerry, a bunch of companies bought the Nortel patents, and this could really be the thermonuclear device in the patent wars. Yeah. So we'll see if they back down on that. And of course, you're right. We'll have to see what happens with Apple, Samsung. You know, if they settle, they say, well, give us your $110 million and we'll give you our $100,000 and now we're done. This is a time that you could walk away from it without losing any face and say, we won. We won both times.
And Motorola, I mean, I'm not an expert, but it didn't seem like it was an agreement of any kind. It was just sort of a detente where they said, we're not going to continue with these lawsuits.
And no licensing deal.
Yeah.
So it was just we're walking away, basically. I don't know. I feel like that's a bellwether for a new way of looking at this stuff. I hope it is.
It's just a sign that a realization that this was an unproductive lawsuit. Yeah. Even if they won, what would they have won by winning this? It's not as clear as the lawsuits against Samsung. And I'm not sure that ordinary consumers are as sensitive to these issues as we are. But nonetheless, I do think that Apple could. My personal opinion is that I think that Apple could be a lot more open about what their future directions and their future plans are, because I do. Right now, there's a certain level of counter FUD going on with people that come to me for advice on buying Apple stuff because they're, well, I want to buy a new laptop. I don't know if Apple's going to be coming up with something new in the next 2 months or if this is their plan to make this obsolete or not. And I can say, well, I'm pretty sure that they're going to be doing this. I don't think that they'll be doing that. I think you'll be safe if you want to buy a new MacBook Pro in the next 2 or 3 months. But then again, maybe not. Whereas almost every other area of tech, it's either through a direct leak or through a preview event, or even just not really slapping around your own employees enough, it's possible to say no, don't buy the Sony RX 100 Model 2 because they've got the Model 3 that's definitely coming out in 2 weeks. It's going to be an event on this date, and this is when and here are the specs. Here are the leaked product images. I think that's the stuff that consumers care about more than who has the IP for who.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's a natural prejudice against companies that sue a lot. I do think that people are very aware of Apple, Samsung.
Do they even really Apple, Samsung? Yes, because that's really hit the national news.
Yeah.
They don't know, and they don't care about the agreements that Apple has with Microsoft about mobile devices. They don't know, and they don't care about this thing between Motorola and Apple. Possibly because this was released after the close, after like what 8:10 p.m. on a Friday. And even if they did make it the lead item on Monday morning, I don't think anybody would understand it enough to rustle up any care about it.
Right.
And again, like Apple absolutely did fire everything at Samsung and HTC and some other vendors, but Motorola was incredibly litigious before they went after Apple. I think it was, I forget the gentleman's name, the guy who ran Motorola before Google bought it, he was threatening to sue other Android vendors. I mean, they have a good history of being litigious all their own. So it was sort of...
Yeah. Motorola invented the modern cell phone, so...
Yeah.
They could be the Apple from that era. Hey, we invented this stuff.
Right? Yeah, and that is an area where I kind of agree with you because when these lawsuits then happen, and now Apple has to really release all of these documents right. that talk about conversations that they meant to be private, Apple sometimes does lose face. So a couple of years ago, the thing in the first round of these lawsuits that really disappointed me was that presentation that Samsung presented as evidence about here is how Apple decided, here's the licensing agreement that Apple offered, and as part of that slide deck, they were giving examples of here's this specific device, here's how much you would owe us per unit. And they were including phones that had come out long before the iPhone that had a BlackBerry-style keyboard that had nothing close to the iOS interface. But the slide itself was saying things like, well, because it is an iPhone-like functionality, you would owe us $12 in each one of these you sell. And when things like that get out, and if somebody that has... ordinary consumers aren't going to be pouring through this and reading this, but then people in the tech press will do it. And if they get upset about it, they can put it into words that they can confusingly and haltingly make understandable to the mass media, to the mass audience. And then it doesn't work out well for Apple.
Renee, hold still for just a second here. I think you missed a spot. I'm just going to put a little of this Harry's cream on you there. Right. Oh, you moved. Don't move.
Sorry.
How do you like that delicious mentholated? This is so good.
It's minty good, Leo.
Isn't it? Oh, man, that smells good. And then, of course, we've got the beautiful steel-handled blade. These are made in Germany. The king. Oh, I love that. The king of great steel blades. And let me just. You're not going to feel a thing here, Renee. Watch this. I'm just going to.
I trust you completely, Leo.
Right there. And there, like that. Oh, look at that. Clean as
a patch.
Clean as a whistle. I'm going to need a rag to towel you off there. I forgot the hot towel to begin with. A great shave is awaiting you at Harry's. Everybody, you know, it's not just the blade. I mean, these blades are beautiful and affordable and so forth. But the people are constant. We sent one of these to Steve Gibson, and he said, this isn't, you know, I've been using a Gillette gel to shave with. This is something completely different. It's creamy. It gives you the best shave you ever had in your life. People for years have been, you know, I frankly think taken advantage of by the razor blade companies. $4 a razor blade for the Gillette Fusion. I mean, that's crazy. $4. If you can get it for $4, you're lucky. I mean, I'm paying more than that. In fact, these things are so expensive, the retailers are putting the theft protection devices on the blades. You can't even take them off the shelf. You have to get a clerk to unlock it for you. That's great. It's like they're diamonds. So many people I know don't want to do that. They get the disposable blade. Oh, my God, that's just a nightmare. That thing is made to cut your face up. This is a better choice. Harry's, a great shave at a fair price. It was founded less than a year ago now by two guys, Andy and Jeff. And just as they kind of have used, thank you for, you just clean off Renee right there. We just want to get that. Look at that. Now, how do you smell?
I feel great. Revitalized.
Refreshed.
Hey, rum, Renee.
Would you like some here? I can shave you too, Andy. Although you look pretty clean shaven right now. You look good.
There you go. I shave right before every show because I usually forget to shave. But there you go. If only I were using my kit from Harry's, I would also smell just as good as I look.
Yeah. There are a lot of similarities between Harry's and Warby Parker. Jeff co-founded Warby Parker. Great design, meticulous craftsmanship, amazing value in a marketplace where monopolies and marketing have really inflated the costs and dedicated customer service, very personal. I want you to go to Harry's. Take a look at the Winston set. That's the one I have. It's engraved, and it's beautiful. Winston, as in Churchill. There's also a Truman set. They ship it to your door. It's a great gift for the man in your life. $40 for the set. And that, see what you get? You get the delicious cream. You get a couple of blades. You get the razor handle itself. What are you laughing at?
I'm not sure if it's meant to be, to you can taste it. I don't think you should taste it. That's, if it's delicious, you should take their word for it.
Does it say delicious on the page?
It smells delicious.
No, it is good.
Someone get Leo a baked Alaska?
Hide on Leo.
That is delicious. Actually, that's not bad. It's very creamy. It tastes like there's like whipping cream in it. Great shave, great price, shipped to your door. Harry's, HARRYS.com. And you'll get $5 off your first purchase if you use the offer code MACBREAK. Harry's duck. So I was $35 in for the Winston set. This is such an elegant gift for a fella. Actually, I guess you could give it to a gal, but I don't know. I mean, they might take it the wrong way. Could you give a shaving system to a gal? Yeah, all right. I mean, she'll thank you for it because you've never felt so smooth. And I think for the future, we're going to have people shave on this show. Right on the show.
Chairs behind.
You should hear what Steve Gibson said, unsolicited, because we sent him one. Harrys.com, use the offer code MACBREAK. And there's even a card that says, good looking, better looking, chocolate melts, steel is forever. Yeah. Harrys.com. I just love that.
Just to cover all bases, how about the Harrys and chocolate?
Harrys what?
I mean, it's a great slogan, but just to cover all bases, if Harry's and chocolate, just, you know, go to CVS.
Oh, do both.
Half pound bag of peanut M&M's, just, you know. Then you're cooking with atomic gas, sir.
And you're happy inside and out.
Hey, how about that big Beats merger? What the hell? Is that going to happen, or was I right and it's a bogus rumor? What do you think?
Did that video scuttle it for him? Did the minute Tim Cook looked at Facebook and Dr. Dre?
Well, Dr. Dre posted, and for those who don't know, Dr. Dre, who is the founder of Beats, and I think still has a 25% stake. You know, if you look at how Beats' finances, they were bought by HTC, then HTC sold back a chunk. It's owned by an investment company now, then they sold back the rest of their investment, and then it's gone up and down and crazy, and I don't know who owns it, but Jimmy Iovine, the record producer, and Dr. Dre involved. Apparently, Will.i.am is a silent partner in it from the Red Hot Black Strawberry Cherries, whatever the name of that group is, Elephant Funk. What is their name? I can't remember anymore. Let's get it started in here. Black Eyed Peas. Yeah,
Black Eyed Peas.
Will, I love Will.i.am, by the way. I think he's the coolest guy ever. He said, they did briefly, I didn't know this, Beats did briefly Lady Gaga headphones. Can't remember what they were called. And then they did some headphones for P. Diddy. And
Will.i.am went to the BlackBerry Labs.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't do a Will.i.am head. He said, I don't want a headphone. In fact, you got to wonder if Will.i.am, he's like, doesn't want to be associated with Beats. I don't know. He wants the money. Anyway, Beats is a headphone company. I think pretty much everybody agrees there's no reason Apple would want that, except it's got good cash flow. Although why stakes parts of it keep getting sold off is a little odd. And then of course they have the streaming music business. Dr. Dre did post a video on Facebook, which was almost immediately taken down, but somebody had already scraped it and put it on YouTube, of him saying he's the first hip hop billionaire based on this. I think he was on the – I didn't see it. Was he on the phone?
It was Tyrese Gibson was doing the video, and he had Dr. Dre in the background, and then everybody danced.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to – my opinion is, why is our – this is us. Because both of these guys, the bandwidth's just declined.
I've been chatting with Pendrick. It happened at the exact same time. I noticed it in both video at the exact same time. So it's us.
I just want Apple to know that the Fine Twit organization is also available for sale. Anytime, just we'll use FaceTime.
Billionaire
all the time. Yeah. I'm the first podcast billionaire.
Yeah. See that is the point too. Because if I woke up one morning and found that there's a rumor that Apple had agreed to hire me for like,
like an $80 package. And I knew that was absolutely bogus. The first thing I would do was put up a video or have my friend say, oh yeah, congratulations, Andy.
Yeah, it could be.
You're a gazillionaire.
It could be.
Because it'd be funny as, it would be funny as hell, and also because maybe that will convince someone to come up with a real offer for $81 million.
I personally think that both Iovine and Dre are ginning this up because it makes them more valuable. Now, Steve Jobs' biographer, Walter Isaacson, always a credible source, says he thinks that Jimmy Iovine is going to be running Apple's content business, which I think is a total non-starter.
We said that last week. It's announcing Eddie Q's workload.
Yeah, but I don't think Iovine's the right guy. I really don't. In 2002, Iovine helped Jobs persuade the music labels to sign onto the iTunes Store, according to Isaacson. At the time, he was running Interscope, Geffen, A&M, part of the Universal Music Group. In 2004, he helped broker the deal with U2 to get that special red and black iPod, which was really cool. So Dan Lyons, fake Steve Jobs, writing for Billboard, says he called Isaacson. Isaacson went back to the notes he had taken while preparing the biography and found something he didn't include in the book. A comment from Iovine that back in 2002, he wanted the Apple chief to acquire Universal. Certainly Apple has enough cash to, in fact, acquire the entire music business if they wanted to.
Yeah. See, that's I'm still not in the headspace where I'm saying this is happening. This is why Apple is doing this. It's still in the realm of an experiment. And if Apple is interested in a company like this, where I'm at, right, the idea that maybe they're trying to make a move to what Sony made about 20 years ago, which is to say, well, why should we just be in the business making consumer products?
I knew I should have given Comcast that $100 million they wanted for full access to Skype. Damn it. But both of you, we'll give it a little chance. Okay. Maybe we can, how about call them both back while I continue to read the story?
I just called Renee back and it didn't help.
I knew I should have given Comcast that money. Can you get
to, your bid is coming through there?
Yeah, no. It's you coming to us.
The screens, but yeah. Okay.
Can you get Brian Roberts on the phone, Lisa, and say we'll give you the money because you're right. It would be very nice for you to have full access to all your contributors over the internet. Apparently, Isaacson thinks that the Beats deal, such as it is, whether it exists at all, is not about headphones or music. Get this, about video. Video. He thinks that Cook wants to bring in Iovine to negotiate deals with the cable companies, with the television companies. Those deals that we've been talking about, you know, they've been in negotiations with Time Warner. Then when Comcast said we're going to buy Time Warner, now they're talking to Comcast. And we've always said it's a non-starter for both companies. Maybe they're being polite, but there's no way they're going to let Apple have special access to their stuff. And, of course, Apple's not made a deal. Can Iovine come in, put a deal together as he did with U2 and the music industry? He doesn't have, as far as I know, he doesn't have any track record with the television industry, but it's an interesting idea.
American Idol.
Did he do American Idol? Oh yeah, he appears on it. Yeah, I'm Jimmy Iovine. I think you suck.
The oddest thing, Leo, is that the reasons didn't leak along with the supposed deal. And if you think if there were solid reasons, that would have been part of the leak along with the price
There's
and everything
no
else.
Deal. This is and why. But now, would Apple? Should Apple deny this deal, or if it didn't exist, would they? See, this is what people tell me. Well, Leo, okay, maybe you're right. Maybe there's no deal. But if that's the case, wouldn't Apple step forward and say, what are you, nuts?
They might be in negotiations for stuff that's not exactly this deal or for elements of this deal. Yeah. They're not going to say anything until they've got whatever they want out of it. And if they never get anything, they'll never say anything.
There also has to be an upside to them talking about this. If they saw the stock was taking a dive because investors are starting to panic that they're getting into the headphone business or they're making a major pivot that they don't approve of, then you would see Apple try to put out the fire a little bit. But absent a reason to do so, they're not going to do it.
Can I play this Dr. Dre video or is it really profane?
It's profane.
Can we? Okay. So what you're about to hear. No, we won't play it. You use your imagination. I'm rich, biatch. Did he say that?
Sort of.
Yeah.
A lot of daycare workers do play Mac Break during work hours, so we probably should be careful about that.
Okay.
But it would be interesting, and again, this is nothing, this is not prediction, this is just me thinking, that you look at a company like Sony that has been around now for 50 years. So if you discount the time they spent as an electronics store, their story starts in the mid-50s. So now that they're basically a 50, 60-year-old company, and you ask yourself, how does a consumer electronic company survive 50 to 60 years? And one of the reasons is to stop being a maker of transistor radios and walkie-talkies and even TV sets and just be in every single sector of whatever they figure their business is going to be. And I don't think Apple would ever articulate in the form of, well, yes, we absolutely need to start manufacturing Apple labeled headphone cable extenders and Apple labeled battery extenders and Apple labeled accessories. I do think, though, I can see a future in which Apple decides that we have all this money we have all this money, and we have products that right now are still making profits hand over fist. Now is the time for us to buy music companies, to buy movie studios, to buy the providers of the entertainment, so that we can not only control the sales of it, we can also have an idea in the promotion of it, the creation of it, and then the final display of it.
By the way, this Dr. Dre video now has an ad for LA Hair in front of it. So at least they're going to make some money there.
I was joking yesterday that it could just be that Apple's decided they really need someone to take over the negotiations with Hollywood and their music studios. It has to be Jimmy Iovine, and Beats is his signing bonus.
I agree.
That's a big bonus.
No, I'm with you, Renee. I think that whatever they're planning for business, I think the idea of having a team that is not an electronics executive that had to train to negotiate with entertainment companies, but an entertainment executive that speaks the lingo of tech, I think that's a really, really that would be a very, very interesting acquisition. Although we probably shouldn't say acquisition in the terms of another human being, but in terms of how do you get someone to stop making Beats Audio their focus? Well, you buy Beats Audio, and you make sure that everybody that signed on as a partner of Beats Audio is now a very, very happy, happy dancing naked in the backyard, for having money fights with raccoons, happy. And that might be an explanation for this.
You didn't have to buy Burberry to get Dame Angela Arendt's in. I mean, can't you just say, hey, Jimmy, can you leave the Beats thing behind?
It's a lot of overhead, though. Beats doesn't sound like it's that much overhead.
Yeah, I guess you're right, because you got $1 billion a year.
Also, Burberry is different. You Apple already has retail stores. All you're doing is you're bringing in someone else to manage this business that you already have. And also, that was a legitimate open slot, because there were some problems with the previous guy, and there's certainly room to make some changes there. This wouldn't be as dramatic as a Beats acquisition.
Yeah, well, it'd be the largest acquisition in Apple's history.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, but still pocket change.
Yeah,
and they make quality in-ear headphones, Leo. They can make middling quality over-the-ear headphones.
Yeah,
that's easy.
but the other thing is that I think that it's easy to overanalyze this, because remember that Apple got their first VP of retail from Target. So it's not as though it's a really, really freakish thing to hire someone who's successful in retail to come in and do things in retail. It would be interesting if this is part of a 5 to 10 year plan to have Apple have a portfolio of services and features and products that goes beyond selling consumer hardware, and really becomes, we want to make sure that the Apple brand on something means that you might enjoy this TV series, this movie, this music collection in a way that you might not have if it were being produced by a different label or something like that.
I got to think that the Comcast is... is not like swayed by a pretty face. Oh, it's Jimmy Iovine negotiating. Well, let's put aside all our concerns about Apple taking all the oxygen out of our business and could make a deal, because we love Jimmy. But it's not going to change the facts of the matter.
It does. It's not going to say we were intimidated by, or we were going to negotiate with Apple for a different way now, but now we're going to change our statute. It's more like we now have someone who can have an idea that would not have occurred to us as a bunch of people who grew up, who've been living and breathing the tech industry for the past 10 or 15 or 20 years. It's not so much that there are specific deals that can be cut. It's that this person, this team can have ideas that Apple would not have had. The same way that, again, someone who was a successful CEO of Target could figure out how to build an Apple store that is not going to make the same mistakes as the Gateway store, or God forbid, a Radio Shack.
And also, instead of being one of nine different things on IDQ's plate, you know, Eddie's got to run the App Store, the iTunes Store, the iBook Store, iCloud, Apple Server Center, all these different things. You just have one guy who knows the industry and is doing that for you every day.
Oh, he's working too hard. Poor Eddie Q.
He has no time for his Ferrari, Leo.
I really don't want Eddie Q's workload.
No, he's gone.
I want his money. I want 1/100th of his money. I will take maybe his Monday schedule from 1:45 until 2:30. That's probably about as much of his job as I could ever do.
I'm going to just stay on record as this deal is a non-starter, never was a deal. It's a bogus rumor. I just don't buy it.
Interesting thing to talk about, but it's still rumor. Yeah. And we're still just anybody who talks about this as it's a done deal and explains that, well, I know exactly why Apple's made this choice. It's like, okay, I think you've got strike one and strike two there. Right. A, assuming this is definitely happening, and B, assuming that, you know, not only do you know this rumor is true, but you know the reasons behind the rumor thing that may or may not be happening. So,
yeah.
You know, Samsung put out a line of luxury headphones, so it's competition there.
Ooh.
There you go. And they're 70% bigger than Apple headphones, so you know they're better.
Angela Ahrens has been 3 weeks now at Apple, already reshaping the retail team, visiting stores, holding calls with store managers, according to Mark Gurman, who's everywhere these days. You know, I found out Mark's 20.
It's ridiculous.
He was on TNT this morning. He's a kid. He's also got, seems to be the guy. We quote him more now than Jim Dalrymple. Angela Ahrens has reorganized or re-architecting the top retail brass to better fit with her vision. Bob Bridger, who's VP of Apple Retail Real Estate, the guy who buys, you know, the store properties, buys the actual land or leases it, and Jim Bean, he was VP Finance. He's VP of Apple Retail Operations, will stay there. Steve Cano, who is Vice President of Retail, will go on off. He's going to do we're going to send him to do international sales somewhere else. the head of Apple European Retail, Wendy Beckman, head of China Retail, Denny Tuza, are coming in with broader responsibilities. She does online as well as the physical stores. Earlier this year, Apple appointed Bob Cupins, who was a former Delta Airlines executive, to run online stores. Not sure what his role will be going forward, but it looks like he maintains his role. According to Apple employees with whom, this is Mark Gurman writing, according to Apple employees with whom Ahrens has shared her vision for the future of Apple retail, further growth in China, one of three critical pieces on which she will focus. She believes the tastes of Chinese consumers are critical across the globe, not only in China. And Apple needs to, listen to this, focus on making its stores and retail marketing initiatives friendly to that growing sector of the world. Does that mean all the stores or just the Chinese stores? She's been touring Apple stores in the nearby area, the Stanford store, multiple stores in San Francisco. Employees who have met with her describe her as warm and genuine, honest and passionate, and she is one snappy dresser. As one senior ranking Apple retail executive put it, she is so Apple.
Is that like being so Raven? I haven't seen that show, so I don't know.
I am so Apple. So people did not like Browett, by the way, the Dixons guy. I think it was because he was such a – Dixons is really a low-end retailer. Yeah. And Angela comes from a higher-end fashion background.
Yeah.
Even over the phone, one retail manager said, you feel like you're speaking to her as if she's sitting right next to you. Second area she wants to focus, taking Apple retail into the future, mobile payments. So, you know, a wallet has been just sitting there. What is it called? The Passbook. Passbook has just been sitting there. Be nice. She apparently is going to work with Eddie Q to build a mobile payment service for the iPhone.
Yeah, that's long overdue. As soon as Passbook made its appearance, I really thought that you would be able to use your Apple ID to purchase things inside the Apple Store. Because what better place to test out a system like that And A, make the Apple Store an even more special experience for people, but also to collect the data that they can present to other retailers saying, well, here's how this positively affected our revenue as soon as we allowed people to make payments through their phones. Here is how many transactions that we produced. Here's how much money we put through. And here's how many problems that were created by this. And it's a very, very low number and a very, very low bar on the graph. And that's how you then sell mobile payments to pharmacies, to clothing stores, to other places in the mall.
But you do that.
Third area of focus will be the Apple Store app. In fact, the entire end-to-end Apple Store sales experience, from the point in which you find the product you want to purchase to how they discuss the product with Apple Store employees to how they pay for the product. Gurman says, Arendts would like to redesign the complete experience. She told some retail managers, I got my MBA at Burberry, but I will get my PhD at Apple.
I mean, to Andy's point, you can use the Apple Store app now in many countries to scan the barcodes and use your iTunes account to pay for the goods. It's just not integrated with Passbook or Passkit at all. So there's sort of that last loop that's not there yet.
It's clear that the Apple rank and file love her, which is important. You know, if you're going to be a leader at Apple, you better have the support of the people underneath you. It seems like she's a very, very, very good choice for this position.
Yeah, I mean, I have not spoken to anybody about her tenure and what retail store transactors are about that. But I was talking to people about that with her predecessor, and the speed at which he was creating a demoralized spirit inside those stores. Yeah. When you get these people who are they are often people who are working there because they love Apple and they love their products and they know that they're not part of, you know, Apple Cupertino. They're not part of the legacy of Apple, but they are very, very pleased to be sharing products that they really, really like with other people. And so when they feel as though they're starting to be treated like, you know, anybody who's working at Sunglass Hut, anybody who's working at The Gap is saying, you know, we feel as though we can cut down your hours. We feel as though we can start paying you less. We feel as though we don't need to treat you as well as we always have. That really has a domino effect. It makes people suddenly expect, okay, fine, we will act like typical, like, mall employees now. We will be aware of exactly what we are required to provide to you, our employer, and to our customers, and we will not be very well motivated to do much more than that.
Dan Rayburn, writing for Streaming Media Blog. We've had Dan on Twit before. He's one of the, you know, most astute observers of the behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on with content creators, content distribution networks, and the big ISPs. Says that Apple has decided to negotiate deals with ISPs for their own content distribution network. Apple has for years used Akamai, which is the king of content distribution. The idea of a content distribution network is the company owns servers close to you, close to your ISP, so that the content comes faster to you. Apple has used Akamai at great expense, I might add. Akamai is not cheap. To make it faster and easier to download stuff from iTunes, to watch Netflix on the Apple TV and other stuff. But the idea that Apple might create its own CDN is very interesting.
They care about the experience. They care very, very deeply about how good the quality of your iTunes is. And your point, they pay for their own Netflix delivery, which is why Netflix is so good on the Apple TV. And this looks like just a logical extension of that.
Apple takes up, according to Sandvine, about 2% of total internet traffic at peak hours. Of course, Netflix is about 34%. but I have to say, this is an interesting example of why Apple is a different kind of company, because this is money you spend that is not on a more beautiful store or a more beautiful product or marketing or advertising. This is money you spend on consumer experience, and it is not insignificant. It's a lot of money to do this right.
It's sort of like painting the back of the fence in Steve Jobs lingo, because it's not something that's obvious to a lot of people. They'll just notice the quality. You know, you're counting on them to notice the better experience and to associate that with Apple's brand, but it doesn't give you an advertising advantage or a branding advantage in copy.
Yeah, but it makes people who have Apple TV happy, and they don't know why they're happy. This is why these interconnect deals are kind of hidden, because if you get bad Netflix service, you don't blame your internet service provider, even though they might be at fault. You blame Netflix. Apple's TV works better. I don't know if you're going to say, hey, that's my Apple TV. You're just going to say, hey, Netflix is working great right now. It's a pain in the back of the fence. I think that's a very apt way to put it. But again, one of the reasons Apple is where it is. Gotta support that. Developers are going to be able to provide promo codes for in-app purchases. You'd think that's something they would have had for a long time, but no, this is new. That it'll be easier for people to try out freemium games and apps with promo codes. The way it's been so far, I guess you could use a promo code for the initial download, but you couldn't do it for in-app purchases.
This is really, I mean, this is more of an inside baseball thing because there's not a lot. You can't still give unlimited promo codes, so they mostly give it to reviewers. I've always paid for my own apps. I've paid for my in-app purchases.
Me too.
But I can understand if you're a small site and you have a lot of apps to go through, right. It's very beneficial. But it's not something that's going to help an everyday user of Apple products.
So this is not for users, this is for the press.
And you could give them out as contests or something, but yeah. I think it's still, you get 50 or 100 codes every time
you refresh
your app.
You don't get a ton of them. Oh, okay. So you can't have, hey, this week only 50% off with the offer code Mac no. app. No. All right.
I mean, there's certain provisions for vouchers for enterprise and schools and things, but not for everyday customers.
What's Apple going to do now that Word Lens is a Google company? Apple's been in their most recent iPhone app, powerful Word Lens was featured. This was the really cool iPhone app that lets you take a picture of a sign and it translates it, font and all, into English. Google just bought them last week. I don't know if that means they won't do an iPhone app. Google makes plenty of money on iPhone apps and is very happy to do iPhone apps, so I imagine the Word Lens will continue.
Yeah.
But I doubt you'll see it in an Apple ad going forward.
Yeah. I don't see them. It's going to be rolled into the Google apps. You're still going to be able to get it. You'll still get the advantages of that technology if you're putting photos on Google Plus, I think. We were talking about that before the start of the show. I don't think it affects Apple at all.
And it's a platform value thing, though. I mean, Instagram was a great app on iPhone. It was bought. Snapseed. There's a lot of terrific apps that just get bought out from the App Store. And whether that means they're still available or not, and even Apple, once in a while, they'll do that with Siri. But it makes you wonder, again, when that sort of platform exclusivity and first-party apps and Apple starts buying more and more of the apps that they show off in commercials kicks in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The word of the day is graphene. I was watching TNT last week. A lot of conversation about both Apple and Samsung racing for patents on graphene. It's the, according to the article in Bloomberg, it's the high-tech version of cling wrap. It's a transparent material that conducts electricity, so you could put it over the screen of a phone or a tablet to turn it into a touch screen. It's thinner, stronger, and more flexible than what they currently use. It will allow flexible, for instance, screens, smartwatches, tablets. Samsung, Apple, and Google are all three amassing arsenals of graphene-related patents. Samsung and Apple perhaps coming into battle over this one. Samsung has 405 published applications. 405. In the U.S., that's worldwide. In the U.S., Samsung has 38 patents and 17 applications using the word graphene. Apple has 2 patent applications. IBM, Foxconn. This is going to be an interesting technology with a lot of people claiming patent. You know, if they all get a few patents, then they can just say, "Hey, we'll ignore it." Yeah.
The one thing I've heard that's really interesting is still graphene and battery technology, because we're still using lithium ion batteries. Not only are they big, but they're also an insulator. So it means you have to throttle down the processor and all these devices so quickly because the heat gets intolerable.
Right.
And if they can figure out a way to get past that, then not only do you have all the advantages of graphene, but you get thinner devices that can stay faster for longer.
Graphene is really the holy grail. It's more durable than steel and has high heat conductibility. Mm-hmm. High heat conductibility. Conductibility. I haven't been drinking
yet.
I'm going to start right after this show. And can conduct electricity 100 times faster than silicon. Well, that makes sense. Isn't silicon not a conductor? Isn't that the whole reason they use silicon? I don't know.
It's a semiconductor.
It's a semiconductor, right. I don't think that means necessarily what you think it means. European Commission announced a $1 billion 10-year funding initiative for graphene development and research. I don't know what it means, but that's the word of the week. Keep it in mind.
Future, Leo.
The future. One word, Benjamin. One word.
Way the future.
Graphene.
Way the future. Graphene. Way the future.
It's not plastics anymore. It's graphene.
Graphene, son. That's what my father
told me. I do not do iPhone rumors, but let's just get him out of the way. Rene Ritchie, you know, he's got his finger on the pulse of the rumor beat. We're going to see what? Bigger screen?
Yes.
1704 by 960. That seems like a very specific rumor.
So I think that's probably Mark Gurman as well, right?
It's Mark Gurman again.
So I've heard only of one bigger iPhone, and Apple prototypes everything. And
right, so it's meaningless to say they've got a screen at this resolution. It's meaningless.
Well, I mean, they've got, like we discussed earlier, they've got touchscreen, you know, Macs and iMacs and MacBooks. They just don't like them. They prototype everything. Mark might have heard that they've chosen the 3X iPhone as the most likely candidate. I don't know because I haven't heard that yet.
Right.
But in order to scale, they have a couple options. They can just make the resolution bigger, like they made the iPad mini smaller. Mm-hmm. So you have the same amount of pixels, but the density goes down to, you know, roughly iPad Air levels. They could also go to 3X, which means every pixel on the original iPhone, the iPhone 1, 2, 3, and 3G, just is made three times. You instead of doing two of them like the iPhone 4, you do three of them. But then some pixels fall on the grid, so it looks a little bit blurry. But if you try to do 4X, which is pixel double a retina display, then you've got to have a GPU that drives it. You've got to have LEDs that shine light on it. And it becomes an obscene amount of power and, you know, pixels beyond what the human eye can look at. And then you could maybe go 1080p like Android phones or 2K like the upcoming Android phones. But in that case, you're just throwing everything out and developers have to start from scratch. So it's a really interesting problem for Apple to solve. And 3X could be... It's not a great solution because Android already is much higher than that, but it's a pragmatic solution if they go that way.
4.7 inches? Is that the size or is it bigger?
Sounds about right.
I could believe that. I don't think they go crazy stupid big, but I think they want to go bigger.
4.7 is exactly right. I mean, that's the Moto X, and that's anything bigger is a little big. Anything smaller is too small, at least for my hand, and I think for a lot of people, that's the size. And I know Apple really still probably will continue to prioritize one-hand use, right?
Yeah, that'll move to software as well as hardware, though. It won't just be because the phone is physically thin. It will be because there's a lot of things like the persistent back gesture and controls maybe moved around a little bit. That kind of stuff. BlackBerry did a lot of good stuff with that with BlackBerry 10, where you just make the gestures take over the navigation for the phone.
Let's talk a little bit. This seems to be a minor thing, but I guess a big thing if you had an iPhone and you went to Android, people cannot seem to get text messages to you. Of course, Apple uses messages, and Apple keeps in the contact information a checkbox that says whether you support iMessage or not, right? Or messages, it's called now. There's a class action suit going because people say, so I got an Android phone and there was no way to stop the iPhone from trying to use messages to send it to me, and I don't see anything. Have you experienced this? I've gotten calls on the radio show from people with this. It's a particular set of circumstances has to happen.
Yeah,
it's a hard problem.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Renee.
No. I was going to say it's a very hard problem to solve because Steve Gibson did a brilliant job explaining how iMessage works on Security Now. It works by intercepting SMS, and Apple can deliver a phenomenal experience because they've bolted it to SMS. And that includes not you having to make your own certificates and all these crazy things that you would do in a trust nobody solution. But Apple's doing a lot of heavy lifting there. And there's no mechanism to tell somebody that you're leaving iMessage. Like Apple's not doing a pop-up to say, are you still using iMessage? Are you sure? So unless you turn it off when you leave, Apple has no way to know you've stopped using it. And also, unfortunately, it's a little bit buggy because that the propagation of you telling it that you've left is not always perfect. And even when you call them up and say, I've left, and they say, yes, we've deregistered you, that propagation is not perfect either.
Yeah, it seems like it's a bug. Some say Apple's doing it on purpose. Adam Pasch at Lifehacker said a lot of users have the problem. I've heard, you know, complaints from a variety of people. Some people say, hey, I almost cost me my marriage because my wife thought I was ignoring her. I guess it could be serious.
The bug should be fixed. Go ahead, Annie.
Anytime a message is supposed to be sent but isn't sent or isn't received, that is a big deal. I think it's ridiculous, the idea that Apple is doing this on purpose, partly because I don't think Apple's that kind of company, but mostly because I know exactly how poorly iMessage often works. Because there are times when I'm logged into two or three different places and it will come into two but not the third, or I will have logged out and it will just – and logged out and then log back in again. And
I will then go back to the old MacBook that's on the nightstand in my bedroom and find out that I can see half of the conversations that have been happening, but not all of them. It's just that I think there should be a little bit more transparency in how Apple messages prioritizes and sends along messages right now, because these sort of things are just old hat with iMessage and Now Messages.
One woman says her daughter's winter break from college was ruined after she received a free Moto X from the Jimmy Fallon show. Do not accept free Moto X's.
Because I took lots of pictures and they were all crappy.
Yeah, really. And Apple's advice is inconsistent at best. They don't seem to really know how to fix this. That's the problem.
Well, I mean, a lot of people are quoting Apple support technicians, which, like, you know, God bless them. Any customer service representative from any carrier, any manufacturer, they don't always have up-to-date knowledge. And they often read things on blogs and pass that on as, you know, stuff that they've heard. You can't ever sort through that mess. That mess is just intractable. But yeah, Apple has to fix that bug, because to Andy's point, that happens all the time. But on top of that, the way iMessage is set up is designed to benefit hundreds of millions of people who use it, but it comes at the cost of not being easy to leave for the whatever percentage of people choose to leave.
If you're an iPhone user now and you're thinking of getting an Android phone, is there a way to ensure that you'll continue to get text messages or no?
Your best chance is to turn off iMessage on your phone and then go to the people you know who have iPhones and say, look, make sure that I'm not set up as an iPhone contact on your device, because the iPhone contact is sort of a special contact.
Right.
Yeah. See, that's another thing that still just gets me very, very confused, because every time I keep getting new devices, new Apple devices to test out maybe for 30, 40 days. And then, of course, as soon as I turn on my other ones, I say, oh, do you realize that this email address and this other device has now been added to iMessage? So even if you have two or three, it's very hard to be. Now I have three different email addresses that are associated with my iChat account. And I really want to be able to tell I really want to tell the system that at no point should you ever use this email address or this phone number as a transport as a way of finding me. So the advice that I give people is that if you switch to Android, just make sure that you physically log out of the service on your previous phone and on your previous mobile devices, and then log back in again when you start using them again. Because that is that's what I did just out of defense. It worked fine for me. I told that, I've been giving that tip to other people, and they said that they've been having success with it. But there's just so many variables in solving this problem that you just don't know when you've killed that last cockroach.
Some people said that Apple should make iMessage for Android as a solution to this, because then you'll still be getting your iMessages. Theoretically, that sounds good, but it's cross-platform and services, two things at which Apple has not traditionally excelled, and also doesn't fix it for Windows Phone users or people who switch to BlackBerry or just switch away from a smartphone but to something else. So, it's a tricky... Yeah. A lot of people complain about it, but it's hard. I've been thinking for a month on this, and I haven't thought of any really clever way of fixing it. And I'm by no means intelligent, but it seems like a difficult problem to solve.
I've never liked messages. Never. Ever.
Well, it works great. I mean, it's such a signature thing. It works great so long as all of your friends are using iPhones. But as soon as you put somebody into the mix that is not using an Apple piece of software on an Apple piece of hardware, that's when you start lighting candles at your nearest Catholic church, because it might work, it might not work, it might work really, really well, it might just sort of half work, and you might decide, well, it wouldn't cost me that much to simply maintain my contract on my iPhone and keep that one in my pocket as well, just to make sure that I don't miss anything.
And this has been a problem for years. I mean, it's getting attention again now because of that blog post, but it's something that a lot of people have been wrestling with for years.
I've been getting calls on the radio show for a long time, and I've never had a solution for anybody. I just shake my head and go, ugh. Panic has decided when they update Coda, which I love, Coda to 2.5, they're not going to offer it in the App Store. They say the sandboxing is onerous, and we're going to have to start selling this direct instead of selling it through the App Store. That's because Coda is a special kind of app? Or what do you think, Renee?
It's sandboxing. And sandboxing is something that Apple introduced when they introduced the Mac App Store as a way. It's a security feature. And they have something called entitlements, which lets you do things like punch through the sandbox to access files that are outside the app itself. And Apple's did a bunch of special entitlements because they knew there were a lot of legacy apps that do a lot of fancy things. But the problem is there's not enough of them, and there's no clear way to balance everyone's interests. So Coda is a development app. I use it all the time for web development.
Me too.
And it's got to do, it's got to do a lot of really interesting things. We spoke to Rich Siegel about this yesterday, and he was talking about how something even like BB Edit on the
Mac
App Store.
He's never sold that in the App Store, has he?
It is. No, BB Edit is in the App Store, but it can't do everything.
It's a different version. That's right.
Yeah, it's got some things that it can't do because he's pulling your projects and he's scanning your disk. And he's so Coda sounded really classy about this. They said they talked to Apple for a long time. They're not mad at Apple. It's the reality of the way things are. But it looks like there's just going to be a class of applications which are, you know, admittedly they're $50 plus developer centric or tech or expert level apps that aren't going to fit in Apple's vision for a secure Mac app.
This is a specialized app, and it doesn't seem like that's, especially to the people who use it or web developers, this is too onerous. I think Panic has done a really good job of transitioning. When you download 2.5, it'll see your Mac App Store copy, it'll unlock it, and you'll now be kind of transitioned to the new way of doing things. They can't use iCloud anymore, so they've created Panic Sync for free. So it'll automatically sync all your setup to your other Codas. So it sounds like they've come up with a solution that works. So good on Panic, because I really like them. And this is not a sign of things to come, because it's just a specialized app.
Yeah, although that sandboxing is an incredible pain, and it would be great if Apple could figure out a way of letting developers do more but still maintaining the security.
I mean, I like the whole notion of it's not called Intents. What did you said it was?
Entitlements.
Entitlements. I love that notion where you have to say ahead of time, look, I'm going to need this, this, and this.
Or an explicit user action has to trigger this functionality.
Right.
Also, Apple has worked very closely with a lot of developers. When developers we have a problem in sandboxing, Apple will work very closely with a lot of different developers to get a solution to that problem.
Right.
It's not really a landslide of disapproval from developers, although there are a number. It is interesting when you see a developer like Omni decide that, okay, we are not going to use iCloud for syncing. We are going to create our own syncing service because we're having such a hard problem working with whatever standard that Apple is giving us. So if Apple pays attention to this sort of stuff, it won't turn into that problem 2 or 3 years from now, because one app store that has everything and controls our updates is such a big, big win for the users. And most developers that I know, they don't like so much of sandboxing. They don't like so much of dealing with the App Store. But at the end of the day, you put it in this place where people can find this app really, really easily. Updates happen so easily that their support calls are not as frequently a problem of someone is trying to use a 2007 app with Mavericks. So something to take a look at, though.
We're going to prepare your picks, gentlemen. We're going to go to our picks of the week in just a second. First, a word from Shutterstock. 35 million plus stock images, vectors, footage for your creative project. You pay once, use it in any form. It's royalty free, and they are adding more all the time. Currently, 37,213,254 royalty free stock images, more than a quarter million added this week. They have great apps. The App Store app is a Webby award winner because it's so beautiful. They just added Android as well. It's a great way to get suggestions and ideas. When you sign up, and by the way, you don't need to use a credit card to sign up. Just create an account. You'll get a free photo and vector image every week that you can use. I don't know what. If you need a camel, you can get a camel for free. What's great about Shutterstock is they have image packages, but also subscriptions. And I'm going to tell you how you could save on that subscription. Check out their search engine, too. It's incredible. You can search for nouns, but you can also search for nouns plus adjectives. So you could search for a bear, and they'll have lots of pictures of bears. By the way, I'm not logged into my account, so it's asking me to create the free account. Do that, because then you can save these images right out to your Lightbox, share it with others, or just keep it for future reference. What if we want to do an angry bear, though? I don't want just any bear. I want every bear image to be angry. There's some angry bears. I love those. And then one of the things you can do is you can narrow it down by color, by the kind of image, whether it's vector drawing there's a really angry bear, a photograph of an angry bear. You'll see it comes in all sizes, including supersized 4452 by 4096. That's 300 DPI and a beautiful image. Most of these images are from professional photographers and artists. They're highly curated, so you know the 20,000 images they add each day are going to be great. Don't forget to click the footage tab because you'll see video footage, and also you can get a free clip every week for that. Really high quality. A lot of them have alpha channels, great for green screens or use in your presentation. I'm just a big fan. Multilingual customer service, more than a dozen countries, full-time customer support throughout the week. Sign up for the free account so you can, at least you can try it. And if you decide you want to buy, use our offer code MacBreak514 and you're going to get 20% off any package. That means a savings, a big savings, like $50 a month on the subscription package. That's the one we use, 25 images a day. A day. I mean, that's great for a publication. An individual probably wouldn't need that one. I'm a big fan. Shutterstock.com. Use our offer code MacBreak514 and you'll save 20% off. Time, my friends, for our pick of the week. I can just say that my pick of the week is going to be that PQ321Q monitor from Asus. I couldn't be happier with it now that the 1093 is out. If you're looking for a 4K monitor and you have a MacBook Pro Retina late model, you know, like 2013 edition, or the new Mac Pro, oh, it looks good. Looks really nice. I've been very happy. Ladies and gentlemen, Renee Ritchie has a pick, too. What is your pick of the week?
I have to caveat this by saying it's one of those rare times where I haven't actually had a chance to try it yet, but it is a game called Thomas Was Alone, which I've been hearing nothing but raves for. I downloaded it fully intending to start playing it today, but the day got away from me. But all the people whose opinions I trust on Twitter just were raving about this, so I really want to try it, and I figured I would share it before, you know, 800 other apps came out. So it's an indie app. Just became available on iOS, I think, last Thursday or Friday. A lot of people I know, the entire weekends went away into playing this. But it's one of those things where it's just whimsical. It's just humorous.
It's a platformer, but it's abstract, right? I mean, it looks...
Yes.
Huh. So if you're a Mario, if you grew up playing Mario, this reminds me of Monument Valley. There's a whole growing group of games that are kind of beautiful music, abstract art, puzzle-solving games.
Yeah, and I had a chance to talk to the Monument Valley guys, and I think it's very much like this, is they just want to make great games. They're not subject to the race to the bottom. They're not going to give it away for free. They're not going to, you know, do a lot of tricks or do in-app purchases. They want to make great games the same way a great storyteller wants to tell great stories. And the iPad and iOS and, you know, Android, all these other things, mobile is giving them the ability to do that. It's not inexpensive, but it's way more reasonable than old-style, you know, consoles could ever do.
This is both iOS and apps, Mac app. You can get it on Steam. You can get it direct Mac PC, iPad. Seems like PlayStation as well. So you can get it in a lot of different ways. What is Desura? This sounds like a new kind of Steam.
Quite Desura, possibly. I'm not familiar with it.
Clicks down. Huh.
But again, if you're looking for, you know, something fun to do over the weekend, a great distraction, something to spend a couple hours and just really enjoy, this is what I'm going to be doing for the next few hours.
Sounds good. I'm going to try it. I've been playing Bleck. Who told me about Bleck? Was it you, Andy?
I think so. Last week, yeah.
Thanks for wasting a whole week. I'm now stuck here at level 29, and I just can't solve it. It's such a fun game. Highly recommend it. Bleck, iPad or iPhone. What do you got for us, Andy?
Well, I've got this incredibly super sophisticated and sexy no-name import Blu-ray reader drive, complete with, like, you know, random import inspection sticker. This is my pick of the week because Dave Hamilton over at Mac Observer wrote a really cool piece 3-4 days ago explaining a trick. If you like to rip Blu-ray discs into a more useful format than something that is either locked up with DRM or locked up on a disc, you've always had this thing. There's a 5-year beta little app called Make MKV that could take your Blu-ray and convert it into a humongous file that then Handbrake, the free video converter app and ripping app, could then deal with and transmogrify into a video file. But it's always an extra step. He basically found a trick on a support forum. Just add a couple of lines in terminal so that
Handbrake and the OS could see the library that Make MKV uses to take the copy protection off of the Blu-ray. So now it works exactly as quickly and exactly as streamlined as a process as when you try to get Handbrake to rip a DVD, where you just toss in the disc, it finds it, it catalogs the information, and then you simply click a button and it rips it. But he also did me a solid by recommending this little drive in a little aside, which is a $41, yes, cheap, no name drive you can get on Amazon, but it is a combo DVD reader, burner reader, and also a Blu-ray disc reader only. I've had my eye out on a Mac compatible Blu-ray external drive for a while, but I've always shied away because really the only reason why I want it is so that I can rip Blu-rays without having to go to my Windows machine. But I didn't want to spend $150 on something and not know for sure if it would work with Make MKV, if it would actually work with my Mac. So by simply pointing out that, hey, I use this and it works just fine. And also, it's a $41 drive, something wow. that you're only going to be using a few times a month when you buy that that Blu-ray that you really, really like and you want to throw it on your iPad. That's almost as cheap as free. Let me make no bones about this. This is your basic cheap-ass, you know, import no-name drive. But it works fine enough. It doesn't...
Copy protection get in the way with all of this stuff? I mean, doesn't HDCP... that's HDCP compliant, that Blu-ray disc?
There is copy protection on it that Make MKV is able to get around.
Wow.
And Make MKV is free for... It's still in beta, but it's been in beta for since 2010 or something. When it comes out of beta, it will cost money. But while it's in beta, it's free. But it works perfectly fine. I've been using it for about a year and a half, 2 years, and it works just great. And it's rare that I come across a Blu-ray that it can't handle. And because I have an ethical problem with torrenting a movie, I have no ethical problem with buying a movie legitimately and then deciding that I want to turn this into a file that's more useful to me by making it unlocked, making sure that I can put it on my home media server without having to have iTunes running.
And you're transcoding it, but it still looks as good, pretty good.
Just about as good as the original. The problem is that you do have a couple of problems in that if the movie that I ripped yesterday is typical, and that's a 1080p full HD movie. So if you were to rip it without making any customized settings, it would wind up being about a 7 gigabyte file that not all of your Macs devices will be able to play without stuttering. So what you can do instead is that you go into Handbrake and you adjust certain settings. You say, please don't make this a large file size. Please make sure that the bit rate is low enough that even a mobile processor can handle it, or maybe even knock off a couple of different copies of it. After you have Handbrake, make the canonical master 7 gigabyte version.
Right.
Then maybe if you really want to put this on your phone as well as have it streamed through your really super cool brand new tubular Mac Pro, maybe you want to burn off another copy that is still 1080 HD but is lower bit rate, so that you would notice a problem on your 60 inch TV, but on a small phone screen you wouldn't notice that the compression is higher or that some of the details have been lost.
Did you guys ever use something called Fink? Remember Fink? I don't know if this is a good pick. It's for a very small slice of you who want to install Unix utilities on your Macintosh. Fink was
a package manager.
Remember? It would allow you to install, and it's kind of been deprecated. There was a replacement. The new one that everybody uses is Homebrew, and I discovered it the other day, and I was surprised it's not more talked about. If you want a Unix utility, like, let's say, wget installed on your Macintosh in a very slick, easy way to do it. Homebrew is very simple. It's Ruby, but installing it is really literally just pasting a command line into your terminal. It'll run through a script. And then once it's installed, you can do things like brew install wget, and it will automatically download it, compile it. You have to have the Xcode command line tools installed. Do it all for you. Now you have wget. And the other thing that I really like, I don't know if you can see this, but when it completes, Brew will put a little beer mug next icon. You could turn that off, but I like it. There's a lot of beer analogies in the Brew thing. Open source and free. And if you do use Unix utilities and you don't want to build them yourself, it's very easy to create brews that others can install. And there's a very long list of already, and this is fairly new, of homebrews out there. It's brew.sh. And it's a good thing to know about. Well, only for those of you who want to use command line utilities. It's all through GitHub, and there's just hundreds now of brew formulas, they call them, available. So I just thought I'd mention that. Brew.sh. Hey, thank you, everybody. It's great to talk to you. Renee Ritchie, imore.com.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks for being
Always
here.
A pleasure.
And for inspiring me to spend thousands of dollars on a three-screen setup.
Your eyeballs will thank me, Leo.
I have yet to find it. I really want to find a game that will just use all three.
Try like that'd be hard.
It's got to be a flight sim, and I don't want to. That's boring. Who wants to?
What you do is you put a different game on each screen, game. Leo, because,
A driving game probably will do it. Ryan Schrout said Civ 5 would do it, and it doesn't. So I got to find a game that will just let me immerse myself.
To use those multiple graphics cards, Leo, and put a different game on every screen.
Well, as it is now, I have my terminal, my chat, and my game, so I'm happy.
If you do that, I'm going to ask you to have like an actual CRT tube TV set, not a monitor, running in a television or an Atari 2600 as part of that screen setup.
Deal. Hey, thanks, Andy Inako. Chicago Sun-Times, great to have you. Don't forget Inako's Almanac, and he's reading his old columns too over there at 5x5.tv. We will do coverage of WWDC. It's coming up June 2nd. That's a Monday, unfortunately. So we'll be doing it live, I guess, 9 a.m.? Is that when the keynote is? And then a special Mac Break Weekly on the Monday, right after the live coverage. So we're going to flip-flop our Monday and Tuesday programming. That's June 2nd. And I'm starting to think there might be some significant announcements at WWDC. I'm just feeling
it. It's going to be, we might have a lot more to talk about next week, because if that usually 1 week before an announcement is usually when they can't keep a lid on a big secret.
Yeah.
Because at that point, too many people have seen it. Too many people have been through a run through. Too many people know about it. So at this point, if we haven't heard anything major about certain products by next Tuesday, I would start to doubt that we're going to see anything about a certain major product on WWDC.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
I'm being coy about that.
Yes. Koi. I love koi. They're my favorite fish. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, except for in 2 weeks. We'll do it a different time. But normally, 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. We love it if you watch live. The chat room is a valued asset. But if you can't, we make on-demand audio and video, as with all our shows, available after the fact on our website, twit.tv/MBW. Mac Break Weekly, or wherever you can download shows like this, Stitcher, iTunes, of course. We got apps on all the platforms, including iPad and iOS. In fact, a couple of different developers doing iOS apps for us. So that's nice. You get your choice. And we do encourage you to subscribe so you get to see every edition. If you'd like to join us in studio, we have a nice studio audience today. It's good to see you all. Just email tickets at twit.tv. You can show up, but if you want to make sure there's a chair and there's enough room. Tickets at twit.tv. Thanks for being here. Now get back to work, because you know what? Break time is over.